Today is November 21st. We are starting with leadership of Moshe, and we are on Unit 11 for today, Moshe's successor. Okay. Now, it's obvious Moshe's successor is Yahushua. What's the question here? Not so fast. Moshe seems to prefer that his successor should be one of his sons. We'll see why he says that, and where he says that. But more than this is the very informative primer chazal in trying to figure what Hashem meant to Moshe when he told him in Parshas Shoftim. I'm about to tell you appears twice, where Hashem tells it to Moshe, and then Moshe tells it over to Bnei Israel, where it says, Navi Kamocha, I will one day appoint a Navi like you to speak to the people. Teach them that you're not the last Navi. Right? Okay, in Islam, there are no prophets after Muhammad. Right? In Christianity, there are disciples, right? And there are apostles, but Jesus is the main. He's the last of the prophets. Okay. Hashem tells Moshe. First of all, we don't believe that Moshe is the first prophet. He's certainly not the last. Right? The Rambam made two tenets of faith out of this. One, that Moshe is the greatest of all the prophets, but also, very important, Moshe is not the last of the prophets. Okay? You can probably surmise that the reason why the Rambam thought it's a tenet of faith, it's a matter of faith, to believe that Moshe is the greatest prophet ever because of the two that I just mentioned. Because there are other religions who claim that he's been superseded. Right? That's a more astounding claim on behalf of Christianity, because Christians revere the book that Moshe wrote, right? As well as the prophets. Muslims do not revere our Torah. They are not guided by our Torah. Christians are. Right? They believe that there is a New Testament that in some instances can supersede that Torah. I have some significant theological questions about that. What gave anybody the right in the year 325 to change the holy day of God from Saturday to Sunday? That wasn't even done by Jesus. That was done many years after. Right? That's why there are many Christians today who continue to observe the Saturday. Seventh-day Adventists, right, the J Witnesses, they're all keeping Saturday, not Sunday. Right? So, all right, I'm not here to discuss Christian theology of that question. I assure you, if the Pope was here in this room and you asked him, what is the explanation for the Church's opposition to abortion, he is going to quote you a pasuk in Shmos Perek Chaf Aleph. The man who, while hitting someone else, punches a pregnant woman and she loses her babies, and right? Or his opposition to homosexuality. He's quoting from Vayikra. Right? Okay, I think that you know, this theological question I would have as a Christian, and let me tell you, I have been on Bati Dinim for now, it's over 500 gerus, and for most of the ones who are, half of them are because it's a Jewish father, so they were raised in some kind of Judaism and they want the upgrade. Or another quarter were converted to Reform Conservative and they realized that they're not accepted all over the world. But a good 120, 150 of them are because they see the inconsistency. What do you mean that someone came and changed? And to them, it's not even Jesus who made the change. Right? He died on the cross and you ask him, should I continue to wear tefillin? Of course he's going to say yes. It was Saul of Tarsus and Simon and the others who afterwards moved away from that. Right? So, okay, but this is, I'm just saying all this because this is why the Rambam considered it a tenet of faith that the Torah will not ever change. Look, there are a lot of true statements out there about Judaism, but to make a tenet of faith, there are those after the Rambam who said we should have as few of those as possible. Right? If Albo said there were Yosef Albo, just three of them. He kept saying all the Rambam's 13 into three. What if I felt that Shmuel was a greater Navi than Moshe? That makes me a heretic? Right? So to the Rambam, yeah. To the Rambam, Moshe, everything Moshe did was so crucial to the Rambam, and I think, you know, a lot of scholars say this, but I think it's correct that it had to do with what those two main religions, Christianity and Islam, did in saying that someone supersedes Moshe, someone supersedes the laws that Moshe taught. And from the Muslims, this will knock you out of your seats. In Islam, it's Yishmael who is the chosen of Abraham. And Yitzchak was banished from the house. They still like Yitzchak because he's Abraham's son. Right? Yitzchak's, if you ever see in Marat HaMachpelah, it's Yitzchak's place that is really the most built up of all of the boroughs there. His is the most built up. They even have a place for Esav. They have a tradition also, like our Gemara, that Esav is also buried there, at least his head. Right? Right? But Lamaisa, the Quran also seems to love Yosef. There's a whole chapter on Yosef in the Quran. And possibly because Yosef embodies the self-control and forbearance and right. So it's more on Yosef than everyone but Avraham. But they claim that we falsified our Torah in many disputations with Muslims, that we falsified our Torah in order to fit our historical agenda by exchanging Yitzchak as Avraham's favorite, Ahavta Asher Ahavta with Ishmael. For, you know, Yitzchak instead of Ishmael. Right? So when you're living under such a framework, and the Muslims are much more powerful than you are, you're just serving in their court, right? And you may be thankful to be living under Islam rather than Christendom, but it's no picnic, right? Okay, you're the Dibi. So if you're living under such a framework,
our pride
is to the protector. So if you're living under such a framework, so you're going to be something of a kanoi to insist that every single word in this Torah is Torah's Moshe. You know what I'm saying? There's nothing written after Moshe's death. You know, there's an opinion even within Chazal that there are 8 psukim that Yahushua added on to the Torah. Right? There is, and there are some Rishonim. Ibn Ezra seemed to add another 4 psukim, and possibly another 8 psukim that Moshe didn't write. I mean, so there's this. Others weren't as bothered by this as the Rambam. The Rambam says it's a matter of faith to paskin like Rav Shimon in the Gemara. He can't say it's heresy to say that Yoshua added those 8 psukim, because there's a Tanakh, 3 Tanakh that say so. Right? So the Rambam just says it's important for the Jew to paskin like Rav Shimon that says that Moshe wrote everything because, now the scholars say, because of this accusation by Islam that we falsified our Torah for our benefit. Okay? Anyone would like to make the best argument you could that we know today that you might not have known in the year 900, where this accusation is made, even in 800 and in 1100, is the Dead Sea Scrolls. Right? The Dead Sea Scrolls come to us well before the advent of Islam. Not to mention the Bible that the Christians have. Christians have Bibles well before the advent of Islam.
Dated from the 3rd century, 4th century. Why didn't I include a Tanakh that we have?
There's a little problem. You see, we don't have a manuscript of our Tanakh or Torah that dates before the 9th century.
That's not because we're not careful guardians of our Masorah, just that the
Christians and Muslims, too, were very efficient in burning whatever we had. And we didn't have the airtight rooms to keep these things like the Vatican had, or even some of Islamic libraries had. Right?
They'll claim, show us a 3rd century Torah that says that it's Yitzchak that went up to the mountain, and then we'll talk. We don't have such a thing, right? Okay, and in the year 900, Bechor, we didn't have such a thing. These accusations start coming up at the time of Sagittal, that we falsified our Torah. We knew it was Yishmael was Abraham's favorite, and we changed it all to Yitzchak because we feel we're descended from Yitzchak. As a Jew who reads Parshas Lech Lecha B'Ira, not Chai Sar anymore, because Hashem doesn't talk to Chai Sar, Abraham and Chai Sar, but all those psukim that talk about Abraham's descendants being so numerous, the most numerous of all, like the kids that count us like the stars, who do you think is the fulfillment of that? Not us. Islam. And probably Christianity too. Right? Although Christians appeal to pagans, I don't know if they're, you know, physically in DNA Jews, right? But certainly the Muslims consider themselves to be descended from Abraham. I'm not sure from Yishmael. Right? Yishmael is a non-nation in the Torah. Right? You know these stories that mention Yishmael in Lachim and Shochim? He's mentioned in passing when it seems to be just when Gideon is fighting the Midianites, right? One time he mentions that they're Yishmael, which Ibn Ezra uses to explain why when Yosef's brothers saw these merchants coming, one time they call them Midianites and one time they call them Yishmael. So Rashi says he was sold numerous times to make up the word Pasim, Potiphar, Socharim, Yishmael, Midianim. But Ibn Ezra just says, no, Midianim are Yishmael. What was the relationship between a man named Midian and a man named Yishmael? What was their relationship? Half brothers. Right? Avraham had children with another woman, that's in this week's parsha, named Keturah, right? And Midian was one of her children. Right? So was, by the way, Midon. He had one son named Midian and one son named Midon, because in the Mechiras Yosef story, amazingly, it says Yosef was sold to the Midonim, who sold him to Egypt. The other parable test. The Midonim, and everyone says, what's that? Oh, he's just missing you. No, he was sold a few times to Bnei Keturah. So I will tell you this. This name does appear in the Tanakh a few times, especially in Taylor. There is a group of people known in the Tanakh as Hagrim, or Aravim also. Ba'arav, Masa Ba'arav, Yishael, Hagrim and Aravim. We can call all those people the descendants of Abraham. What do you think Hagrim means? Hagar, yes, descendants of Hagar. They have a tradition also that Keturah is Hagar. Muslims do. We do too. Right? You familiar with the Rashi that says that? I think it's all around when I see a Medrash says, Keturah is Hagar. Why? What makes you say it? Because her name is Keturah, which means that she was as pleasant as the Ketores. And Ketar in Aramaic means to tie yourself up. So these Rashi says, she tied herself up to Abraham. I'm not marrying anybody else. Okay. Rashi's a little explicit. A little too explicit for a third grader, I think, who's learning Pashas Vaisar, if you know what I'm talking about. Right? Ms. Nami, he says she wore a chastity belt. She tied up her Pesach to not allow any man to come near her after she was already married to Avraham. Right? So what's going on? Why? So I would like to suggest the following, and then move on, because we're going a little too far away from Moshe. Is that when Yitzchak meets Rivka at the end of Parshas Chayisara, it says that he was in Be'er Lachai Ro'i. Why do we care? Who cares where he was? He went to Suach Basodet in a place called Be'er Lachai Ro'i. Not Bitam. And then right after he meets her, it says Lavra Mary Keturah. If Keturah is Hagar, there's something very nice going on there. Be'er Lachai Ro'i, did it ring any bells for you? Where is that? Who? Something else happened earlier in the Torah there. That's a place named by Hagar after the angel came and saved her life. Right? She named the place Be'er Lachai Ro'i. Okay? So it could be that it's some kind of like Mida Keneged Mida. That Avram just made this whole big special splash of a whole big parak about how his servant finding a wife for Yitzchak. And then Yitzchak tells his father, Daddy, I know mommy just died. Right? It's within 3 years, because he's 37 when she dies, and he's 40 when he gets married. Right? We find out precious all those. So, mommy just died, Daddy, I think it's time for you to remarry. You know, I could imagine, you know, your wife is so special, like Sarah, you're 137, but you have to remarry, right? But Eric told me, they had more children? Who would think of such a thing? I look, I don't have a personal experience, but I can imagine when a man's wife, long time wife, who knows how Avram and Sarah married at least 50 years, because when he's 70 coming to Israel, you know, she comes with him, right? So maybe they were married even before then. Maybe they married 100 years. And you lose a wife for so many years, and right away you get remarried? Who does that? You're allowed. Right? The Torah comes and says that even a woman is allowed to remarry. In the ancient world, a woman couldn't remarry after her husband died. She often jumped into the kever with him. In India, they still do that. Right? So comes the Torah to say, a woman can remarry. Right? She just can't marry the original husband if she did remarry. That's the same power she had. It's coming to teach you that in our system, a woman, like a man, can remarry after her husband dies, or divorces. So, by going to Be'er Lachai Ro'i, I think the Torah wants to tell us that Yitzchak went looking for Hagar. Her name is changed, she's not called Hagar anymore, for the reasons maybe the Rashi says, fine. But he's saying is, listen, I know it was because of me that you were banished from the house. Right? I'd like to make reparations. I'd like to reacquaint ourselves. And that's why it says that Ishmael joined Yitzchak to bury Abraham. And Rashi points this out also, the end of Parshas Chayisara. And you mentioned first, it says Yitzchak and Ishmael buried Abraham. By mentioning Yitzchak first, Rashi considers that to be a sign that Ishmael understood his place in the family. I might not say that if not for the fact that when Yaakov and Esav bury Yitzchak, right? What does it say? It says Esav and Yaakov buried Yitzchak. You get it? Esav never relinquished what he felt was taken from him unjustifiably. In fact, Yaakov and Esav are mentioned quite often together in the same pasuk. Yaakov only comes first once in the whole Tanakh. But Yitzchak and Ishmael, like in Divrei Yavim, they're mentioned together a few times. Yitzchak is always mentioned first because Ishmael had to but admit, at least the way our Torah is, that our father gave everything to Yitzchak. And he gave the rest of them, including Ishmael and whoever else was there, matanot. Okay. Remember when Rashi says, what were those matanot? What? It's a Gemara. Anyone remember? Yeah.
I think it's like the, it says that what they went east, so it's like the religions of,
yes,
the,
Yes, the Eastern religions.
Right? He might have come up here. So he sent it to the Kedmon. He sent it to the East. And Rashi quotes the Marimon and says, Koach Tum. He gave him the Koach Tum.
Right? I just saw in a book about a parsha by someone who grew up in Meshul, moved to Israel, and the Rosh Hashiva, the Yeshiva in Otniel, his name was Yaakov Ganek. It's Menachem Ganek's nephew, and he's changed his name to Nagin. So if you see this, it's a very interesting book on what it means to be a descendant of Abraham in coalescing around the whole world as an Abrahamian. And he claims that the Koach of the Goyim is wrapped up in this one single Koach of the Tumah of the East is wrapped up in that one single syllable of being, which is Om. Om is an act of being. Our Western approach to what humans should be is what we do. Our actions shape our character. The Eastern approach is not about what you do, but what you are. That might sound crazy to you right now, but so be it. And he claims in the book that our word shalom, which implies shleimus, is shalom. That Abraham was the originator of this concept of om, of being. But he said, I'm going to send it to those guys, right? And I want you to first concentrate on what you do. Asher bara Elokim la'asos. Right? So the first creation of man is about doing. But then there's a second creation of man with Lo Tov Heyos Hadam Levado, where there seems to be more concepts of man as what it means to be. Again, I'm not going to get into all that, what that implies, but Moshe's Torah is certainly more about doing than about being. Okay, so this is I'm getting back now to the Rambam, who I think proposes some of his tenets of faith to prop up Moshe, that no one should chas v'shalom ever consider that another person came to supersede Moshe. The Rambam in his dealings had to contend much more with Mohammed, because he lived amongst Muslims, than about Jesus. Right? Because while Christians certainly also profess that Jesus is a continuation of Moshe and supersedes Moshe, Mahdi Rambam didn't live amongst them, so it wasn't a major issue. He was aware of the that opinion amongst Christians, so he considered a tenet of faith. Don't believe that anyone could possibly supersede Moshe. Not Muhammad, not Jesus, not Buddha, no one. Okay. So one last point on this is that Christians teach that the broken luchos in Parshas Kisisa is Moshe willfully serving as a precursor for a broken covenant that Yirmiyahu mentions in chapter 31. Okay. You know what I'm talking about? Yirmiyahu in chapter 31. It's right after that Torah of Rosh Hashanah, the second day ends. Yirmiyahu says, I'm going to forge amongst Israel a bris chadasha, a new covenant, a new testament. Not like the early testament that you broke, so I'm forging with you a new testament. Right? It's such hogwash. He never says a new Torah. He says a new testament. And he actually explains what the new testament is afterwards. And he says, the New Testament is that you will not have to be coaxed and persuaded into following my Torah by the rewards and the punishments. It will be written in your hearts and in your minds, and that will be my Torah. Ramban says, Pasha, that's a molosh and look at Chazlavacha, that Hashem will make it like what is natural that you'll follow the Torah. So if a Christian talks to you about it, Jeremiah 31, you just tell him, first of all, it doesn't say a Torah chadasha, it says a bris chadasha. A bris is why you keep the Torah. The original bris is, if you keep my Torah, but nasati mitar etzachem, mitzareh makosh, v'esabtar d'gadecha, v'esabtar d'gadecha, and even v'achalta v'esabata, you'll succeed. But be careful, when you succeed,
of Sefer Shoftim. I'll give you the stick if you don't accept the carrot. Or if the carrot drives you away from me. Right? That's the bris, that's the original bris. But that didn't work so well with you. Reward and punishment didn't work well. I'm going to have a bris chadasha in the future. Of course, the best argument against Christianity on this is, where in 2,000 years ago have we run into such a situation where you don't have to teach from the greatest to the littlest about following God's Torah? That's the situation that exists today. The bris chadasha hasn't happened yet. Christians claim that the New Testament is this. So they say that Moshe willfully and knowing full well that his successor and replacement Jesus would break the covenant, so he broke the luchos. Alright? Take this to the bank. Anytime you read commentaries that explain, like Bechoshor, Rashbam, that Moshe accidentally broke the luchos. It became too heavy in his hands when he laid eyes upon the trespass he saw, right? Of the angel. That's meant to be to undo the Christian theology that Moshe willfully broke the luchos, knowing what it meant for the future. Or even possibly Ramban, who says, because all the people that say this dealt with Christian polemics, and Ramban was, and there are movies made about his polemics with Christians. Ramban says that Moshe just lost control when he saw the Diego. Right? He compares Moshe breaking the luchos to hitting the Egyptian, which we talked about in the beginning. I actually compared it at the time, if you recall. Hitting the Egyptian, he lost control. How can you do this? How can I even know? He looks around and no one's doing anything. What kind of situation is this? But he didn't really mean to kill him. He just lost control. He was acting impetuously, which he does a few times in the Torah, right? He did that back when he talked about the whole of Rashi's cases when Moshe gets angry. And in every case, it looks like chutzpah, but it's midrashim. In every case, Rashi shows what went wrong as a result of Moshe's anger. What did he get wrong? Whether it's with Aaron, whether it's, Miriam died, or whether it's... with Elazar in Parshas Matos, right? When he doesn't even get to teach the laws following the war with Midian because he got angry with Elazar for allowing women to remain. So anytime by Yiktof Moshe, by Yicharaf Moshe, something goes wrong. And Rashi is always there to point out. Right? So by saying that the Luchos were not broken with intent, it's trying to say, really? Moshe, without intent, broke the covenant? Crazy. This is in very strong contrast to the Mefarshim, which I would say are among the Rishonim, to be sure, but no one makes the claim as clearly as the Meshech Chochma, that Moshe, cool, calculated, and with clear intent, broke the Luchos before their eyes to show them that you cannot imbue inherent holiness into anything physical. Even this luchos that God himself made is nothing but a piece of rock that has no holiness in it in the face of your behavior. Certainly not that egel that you just made. Right? The object of the egel was the God who just took them out of Egypt. They said so. Right? There's probably the aim of Rav that instigated making it in the first place, the guys who left Egypt with them, because they couldn't fathom, and certainly in the absence of Moshe, they couldn't fathom reaching that God without a physical feature. Right? Think Christianity now, if you will. Okay, how do we know? Because they said, Eila Elohecha, next word, Yisrael, Asher Ha'alucha Meretz Mitzrayim. This is the God, Israel, that just took you out of Egypt. The guy is saying that we're not Israel. It's the Arab, Rashi says that. It's Pashut. Right? So, Moshe, cool and calculated, is looking at them
revering this thing that they just made with their hands because it represents the God who just took them out of Egypt. And I said, didn't we just do this? Didn't we just undo this with the 10 plagues? Didn't we just do this with the 10 plagues, namely the Nile turned to blood? You should know the frog. Did we talk about this earlier? The frog is a goddess of fertility, is the frog. When your wife goes into labor in Egypt, at the time when Israel was slaves, you pray to Heket. She's the goddess of fertility with the body of a woman, seems to be nursing a baby in her hand, and her head is a frog. Plus, the frog is the largest number in Egyptian hieroglyphics. It's 1 million. The frog represented plenty, plentiful. That which is plentiful. So the frogs, of course, and I can say in Pashup Pshat, the frogs left the water because they could. Right? The things that couldn't leave the water, like the fish, died there and stuck up the place. But the frogs could leave the water. Right? Another full disclosure is that there are some Rishonim, the Ramban actually mentions them, that say that Tzfardei are crocodiles. Could also leave the water. It really caused some problems for them. Alright, so so the they don't like to leave the water because they like the water's environment, but if they had to, they would. Right? So then the Egyptians also worshipped animals. So that's why every plague stresses how this affected the animals. Everyone. Kinim Arov Deber Shrim in Barad. All talk about the effect to animals. And then after Barad, Paro's really, really spooked. And he says, get out of here, go. You're the tzaddikim, I'm Rishon. You go, please. And then, but after Hashem Arad starts again, this time Moshe's really upset. Because, you really sounded convincing when you said Hashem Atzadik, but I'm your Rishon. So that's why Hashem, by the next plague, tells him, this is where Bo starts, Boel Paro, ki anich ba'atiyas libo b'slev amadov l'manchis yos v'sayel v'kirbo. Because go to Paro, because I harken this hard, because Kachavis, you've been doing that all along. But Hashem told Moshe, I know, you really felt after plague number 7 that you were leaving. God never tells him to give me 10 plagues. After each plague, Moshe thought they're leaving. Right? But just know, Moshe, I'm hardening his heart. I have a plan. Right? How was his heart hardened? He tells them, you know, if you go out into the desert now, the elements are going to destroy you. You're going to take all these people out into the desert and do what with them? It's an 11-day journey. It's 11 days with a circuitous route, right? Going around. It's supposed to be an 8-day journey going straight on the coast. The Gemara says that in Arabic, right? So when you get 8 days, when are you going to have enough water with them? So we did this recently, right? About the Amun and Moab. What? We do this in this class, right? So you know what it means that God didn't give us water right away. He didn't give us bread right away. God said, no, they didn't take anything with them into the desert. That's the Chesed Nuraya Chavas Kol Nisaya. We talked about that, right? Motachim Bamidbaram, Sweet Echar of Yirmiyahu says that they didn't go out with provisions. Right? What Hashem wanted was for human agency to help. Right? If you love the orphan and the widow, don't make them orphans and widows. How does God love the orphan and widow? To convince everybody else to help them. Right? So Hashem wanted Ammon and Moab to give us water when we left Egypt, but they didn't, so they're punished. Okay, so Paro says, if you go out into the desert, don't you think my son God is going to wipe you out and turn you to blood? Right? So Moshe says, what's the next two plagues? Arbe, Atech Shach Haaretz, and Choshech. Right, you get all this? The 10 plagues were all about convincing the Israel, the Elohim, Mitzrayim, and Seshvatim. And then you get to the big one, the real pièce de résistance is Makas Bechoros, where we're going to take their god while he rules up in Shemayim, Aries, right? We're going to take that ram and slaughter it publicly. We're going to hold on to it for 4 days, a rule only for that year in Egypt. Dab its blood on a doorpost, a rule only for that year in Egypt, right? And roast it so you can smell it. And roast it whole so you can see it. Any Jew who wouldn't get involved with this in-your-face disgrace didn't deserve to leave Egypt, right? This was their way. Mishchu kechulachem tzon. Mishchu etatzchem me'avodizaro kechulachem tzon. The whole purpose here was to get the Egypt out of them. Right? Okay? So we talked about Masav with Simon Labanim, right? Avraham in Egypt involved some kind of subterfuge with power. She's my sister. So too, when we left Egypt, it was some subterfuge to convince them to chase after us after all they'd seen. We're borrowing stuff, i.e., we're going to bring it back. We're only going for 3 days, right? And remember I showed you where they went into a little area there that there was no outlet. Power looks at them and says, their god is not a good general. I'm going to go after them. Right? There's a line like that in the movie. Alright, so the ten plagues was meant to teach them that there's no physicality to God. I'm going to break these luchos to show them with cool and calculated measure. Even these luchos aren't holy, and God made them. Bless you. Okay? So I get back to my original question. Who's the Navi that replaces Moshe? Who is his successor? Of course, it's Yoshua. Right? And yet, this is amazing. When the Pasuk says to Moshe, I'm going to give Moshe, you're going to have a Navi Kamocha. You're not the last one that Christians and Muslims teach. Where everyone from now on is just your disciple teaching what you taught. No. Adrab, this is crucial, guys. This is a big rabbi. Is that the day Moshe dies, right? That's it. Torah law ends that day. The job of every Navi or Rav or teacher from that day on is to do only one thing. To put a fence around the Torah. To protect the Torah. We don't create Torah laws the day after Moshe dies. There's no such thing. There may be interpretations, right? You know what I'm saying? There are some cases where the Rambam holds that something is a Torah law. The Ramban says, no, it's just an Asmata. It's not a Torah law. Davening every day to the Rambam is a Torah law. And the Ramban says it's not. It's not how I understand the law of Dovah Chumrah. Right? It's not just a straight machlokas. It has to do with how to understand various Gemaras. The Gemara says on numerous occasions that davening is a Drabbanan. All over the place. All over Maseches Brachos and Megillah, davening is Drabbanan. So how does the Rambam say davening is a Torah law? Alright, that's for another time. But you can have disputes over what constitutes a Torah law. The day Moshe dies, my job is finished. I've presented the Torah to you, now protect it, learn it, teach it, etc., etc. But there will be other Nevi'im after me who may come to teach things that I think there's a plea to the Gemara at the end of Makos that says Moshe established certain philosophical norms that later prophets changed. Mitzvahs, no. Philosophical norms, yes. Are you familiar with this Gemara? The very end of Makos. Yechezkel changed something. Yahu changed something. David changed one thing. Right? But not mitzvahs. Chas v'shalom. A Navi may come and for the moment, Moshe says no sacrifices are allowed outside of the Ohel Moed. And Eliyahu did that. Eliyahu brought a sacrifice up at Har Carmel. What's that all about? It's called Rosh Hashanah. But no one can in perpetuity say Moshe said X and I'm saying not X in perpetuity. Only for today.
The Nevi'im continue. So I'm going to write down, let's see if you can opinion.
Chazal say that there are four Nevi'im in Tanakh that we had in mind when Hashem told them this. What's amazing is Yoshua is not on that list. How is he don't have the actual successor on the list? Because Yoshua was not like Moshe. Really? The guy that Moshe gives actual smicha to, he never gave smicha to anybody else, is not like Moshe?
We're going to have to discuss that next class. But let's see if we can squeeze out who are the people like Moshe. Yeah.
Shmuel is one.
Yirmiyahu
is one.
Yeah.
Ezra. Okay, and the dark horse, which really should be on the list, is Eliyahu. But Eliyahu is not considered, but we will, because... and what's interesting is that if you can try to think of these guys, obviously not Ezra, but because there's no Haftorah from Ezra, these guys have Haftorahs that really plug into Moshe. Shmuel, anybody know? Anybody born at the end of June? But it's a partial Parshas Korach. Okay, Korach... The Haftar of Korach is from Sefer Shmuel, where Shmuel talks to Bnei Yisrael like the same way that Moshe does in Parshas Korach. He actually quotes Moshe. Okay? Yirmiyahu, anybody know? Yeah, Sfardim. Shmos. Sfardim had the first paragraph of Yirmiyahu, which sounds just like Moshe as a burning bush, as the Haftar of Shmos. Ashkenazim take a different Haftar because that's already one of the Haftaras of the year. First of the 3 weeks for Ashkenazim. Okay? Then Eliyahu, I mean, this is the real big one. Parshas Kisisa is a story about Eliyahu spending 40 days and 40 nights at Har Sinai not eating or drinking. Please, no one gets closer to Moshe than that. What other human being could possibly even do such a thing? Surely that makes Eliyahu like Moshe. Would you agree? Okay. Ezra is not an Haftorah, of course, he's in Subim. But this may be the really biggest one. This is on Sanhedrin, Daf Chaf Beis, where the Gemara says, if not for the fact that Moshe gave us the Torah, Ezra would have. And it gives a whole series of comparisons between Moshe and Ezra. Are you familiar in Chazal, in Shas, of one Tana that the Gemara compares to Moshe this way? A Tana that said, when Moshe himself, according to this Midrash, you have to understand the deeper meaning of the Midrash, I don't know if Moshe actually said this, but okay, let's just leave it. But the Gemara says that Moshe, when he was just about to come down to Har Sinai, which probably would have precluded the Akel, right? This is what made him late. Remember? He asked God about why the Hebrew letters have Yud. If a Yud is written like that in the Mezuzah, it's a puzzle Mezuzah. It's written like this. Okay? You're missing that. I'm not talking about a shin. Right? That's Shatner's guess. Right? You know what I'm talking about, right? There's seven letters that have the three lines coming out of the left side of the letter. Okay? But all the Hebrew letters, right? A resh, a dalet, right? A lamed, whatever. Okay, so all the Hebrew letters have that little snip at the top there, right? So Moshe is asking God, why are you doing that? Who needs that? Right? So God told him, there's going to be a time in the future. Who are we talking about here? Who's the man? Someone is going to darshan mountains and mountains of halachos from those crowns. And Moshe says, God, I got to see this man. Who is this? He goes, okay, turn around, and he'll be sitting in his shir. And he's sitting in the eighth row. This is the Marshal discusses why Dafka the eighth row. And he's sitting in the eighth row in the shir. Possibly the Gemara could just say he's sitting in the back of the shiur. I know we, in the Tanakh you could darshan TMI, but all right, why they eat row? Okay, the Gemara said, go look at the Moshe. And Moshe's not following the shiur. He's lost. What are they doing? I don't know what he's talking about. And at the end of the shiur, the student says, Rebbe, how did you know this? How did you know to come to this conclusion? He goes, it's Halacha Moshe Sinai. So first, Moshe was very happy that he mentioned his name in shiur. But then he says, oh, I remember that law. God told me that law. I didn't know what he was doing. All this stuff in between. That was confounding to me. So, but I remember the conclusion, right? And that's it. And then Moshe asks God, can I see what his last day is like? What is a man doing like this? What is his life? Does he die in glory and peacefully on his bed, right? Because this man should give the Torah to Bnei Yisrael, not me. Right? So that's how it plugs into this Gemara in Sanhedrin, where it says that Ezra should have given us the Torah, not Moshe. So Moshe says, let our Mekiva give us this law, this Torah. So Hashem says, I'll show you what his last day is like, and he's watching him being tortured to death in the Hippodrome in Caesarea. And he says, this is the schar for Torah? What's my last day going to be like? He goes, this is my Gzeira. Just accept it. And then that's the end of the Gemara. So no one less than Rav Moshe Feinstein used this Gemara to introduce his Igros Moshe. First, Chelek Or HaChaim has this explanation, which is really amazing. That will plug into Ezra's job in succeeding Moshe, as well as Rabbi Akiva's job, because Rabbi Akiva has something important role to play in this Indian as well. Okay? Basically, the son of conference has such a role to play. We'll see what that is. Okay, that will close us for today. We're going to continue one by one. Next class, guys, go.